Hi, this is Alicia.
And this is Rafa.
And this is What Does It Feel Like to Have Parkinson's Disease? I'd like to introduce our guest and good friend to our podcast, Rich Broughton.
Hello.
Rich, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate that you're going to share your journey.
Absolutely, no problem.
And I want to start with a definition of Parkinson's. Parkinson's disease is caused by a loss of nerve cells in a portion of the brain. This leads to a reduction in a chemical called dopamine. Many different symptoms are associated with Parkinson's disease, and more common symptoms are slowness in movement and muscle stiffness. Welcome, Rich.
Hello.
Hi, it's great to have you here.
I said to see you guys.
So Ralph and I have both been friends with Rich for about...
a few decades.
Yeah, about 20 something years.
Yeah.
Yeah, since 89, I think it was.
30 pounds ago.
Right. That's...
And when I used to be able to walk down Main Street or dance on Main Street. Yeah, exactly.
So Rich, as you share your journey with Parkinson's disease, I want to ask you, what was the first sign that you felt that something may be off?
Actually, I was at work and I'm not the one who noticed it. It was leaders at Disney and we were coming back. I was just walking down the hallway and she's asked me, she's like, are you okay? And I said, I think I'm just tired from late night rehearsals because I was kind of tripping over my foot and picking it up all the way. Never thought anything about it. And then I remember watching an interview with Michael J. Fox and he talked about how his pinky started twitching. So days went on and weeks went on. It progressed. And I started getting twitches in my pinky. And I was like, oh, man, this can't be happening. Like, I'm manifesting this. It can't be happening. But then I started having problems with my rest of my leg. I wasn't able to walk or I wasn't able to move my left arm. So it was kind of like a bilateral side of just the left side of my body started not working.
Oh, my gosh. How scary.
So from there, I started having the issues. And I talked to my parents, went to the hospital. They kept doing spinal taps like over and over again, spinal meningitis, all sorts of different things. And nothing was coming back. I had one doctor who wanted to put me in the psych ward for a week because he's like, we can't find anything that says there's something wrong with you. He's like, I can't. He thought I was making him up. He thought, you know, I was, you know, manifesting it again. So finally, from there, my mother was like, we need to figure out what this is because it was really starting to impede on my life and stuff. So my mother actually was the biggest fighter at the beginning. So she made an appointment for me at Shands Hospital. And because down in Orlando, there's nobody who's a specialist. There's neurologists and there's, you know, but nobody's a specialist in Parkinson's because it is relatively new. They just kept throwing medication at me. Take this, take this. Nothing was helping. And I'm one of those people that I want solid proof. I want it to be like a pregnancy test. I want to pee on a stick and it turn blue and say, yes, you have Parkinson's.
Right.
But there's not a test for Parkinson's. They diagnose it by you have the effects that are happening to you or the symptoms that fit within this definition of Parkinson's, which I was like, no. So I go up to Cheyenne's and they literally within a half an hour they made me just walk a couple of times for them and they pulled on my arms and my legs to see how my strength was. And they came back and they're like, you have Parkinson's. You have early onset of Parkinson's. I was 37. I was wrecked. I thought my life was over. Nobody knew what it really was. They tell you that part of your brain's dying and there's no cure for it. And of course, the very next day that I find this out, I go to have my teeth cleaned. And... the lady who, my hygienist, was cleaning my teeth the whole hour was like, oh, yeah, I had a friend of mine whose mother died from Parkinson's. She was telling me all this stuff, and I'm like, I'm sitting there like, oh my God, like, this is what I have to look for. She's like, I had to put ballet bars all through her house because she couldn't walk and she lost her balance and everything. And
She's grinding your teeth.
Exactly. Like,
that's exactly. Great. Yeah.
So,
did you tell her? Did she know when she was telling you that? Or did you?
Yeah, because I had just started my new medication. So I was really stuff. And I was shaking. She's like, I need you to hold still. And I was like, that'd be great if I could, but I can't. So, you know, you have to kind of, early on, I had to explain it to people because, just as we talked before, it gives you the stuttering and the slow movement as if you were drunk. Mm-hmm. So I've been detained at the gas station more than once. People ask me if I'm okay. On the beach, I was approached by the cops. That's what was in my cup.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So actually carry a card with me in my book, in my wallet, that says, I'm not intoxicated. I have a neurological disorder. And luckily, I've never had to pull that out. But yeah, so people tend to think that there's something else different, that you're drunk or because I'm young. Or if I go to the store and I have to park in a handicapped spot, I get a lot of looks or people will actually say something to me. And, you know, then and I just kind of blow it off. But my family and my husband, they like to get into it with them.
I'm sure. I mean, that's an etiquette thing. People listening, you know, look outside your box, listen to what you're saying.
Right.
When someone's telling you have Parkinson's disease, you're not going to start talking about how someone passed away from Parkinson's.
Right, exactly. Right. And not all handicaps are visible. There's times where I'm perfectly fine. I could walk and do everything.
Right.
And then all of a sudden my medication just stops and I'm not able to walk or get out of the store or anything like that.
Right.
And I become very self-conscious about it and get nervous. And once you get nervous, you know, everything just starts to go to pot. So,
got the diagnosis, you know, finally you get the diagnosis. Did the doctors talk to you about it or what is the process to educate you? I mean, I know that it's new, or did you have to seek out your own education on it? How did it work?
Actually, they gave me huge booklets on it and what to expect as it progresses. Shands Hospital is amazing. They were so nice to me and so caring. And like, because you find, I mean, people are like, well, it's not like you got cancer or something, but this is something that you will, you know, they told me like eventually you will be in a wheelchair and eventually this will kill you. But that's hopefully long, long. So it changes your life completely. How you, if you're home alone, you know, or how you out in public and just how it changes your relationships. My husband and I, you know, we used to go out and travel and stuff, and now we can't do it as much. Like we've been to Alaska and Mexico and all these other places, but now it's not that easy to travel because we go to places that need that. I have to use a wheelchair or something like that. And it's, no, I was just to say the Shands, they were great. They have libraries there that you can actually just go in and do a lot of research. And the people there, teaching hospital. So they are constantly, you know, have the best newest technologies. And it says that they talked to me about was what you should expect. And
do they have like a support group that you can join?
Well, there's several support groups out there, but the thing is most of them are for elderly because nobody's out there that has Parkinson's that's young. They have like boxing classes, dance classes. For me, when I'm walking, I have problems and there's lots of other things that happen. Like when I walk through a doorway, I freeze. So like I can't walk through the doorway. I know it sounds very weird, but I asked the doctor about it. Like, it's just one of the things your mind does. So I have to come up with ways to trick my mind to be able to walk through doorways. For me, it's easier to listen to music. So I have a beat, a rhythm to walk to. So it's easier for me to dance or run than it is for me to walk. Because your movements, it's easier to do big movements than to do fine motor skills.
Yeah. I remember working with you a couple of times that I was very concerned because it seemed like you would lean forward and use your weight as momentum. And my concern was like, oh my God, is he going to be able to stop? You know? And I'm like, and I want to be respectful, but I also want to be there, you know, for your independence, but I also want to be there to catch you just in case, you know, there's always that apprehension.
No, I call it sofa surfing because when I do get that way, that's just part of the disease. When you start actually walking on the tips of your toes, you lean forward, you can't rotate your hips under yourself. And you do, you use your body's momentum, but and like it happens to me in the house, I know which walls I can grab, which sofa, I can, how far it takes me to get to the sofa. But there are times where I have gone so fast that I literally hit the wall.
Yeah.
Falling is a big problem with it. Usually have a pretty couple really good falls each month, but I've been trying to stay away from those because we had tile put in the house. And let me tell you, tile's hard. It's not as soft as the carpet.
Like, why did we do that?
Exactly. And like, so like now I have my watch that I have, it has a fall detection on it. So if I fall, and I don't move or don't answer the alarm, it'll actually make phone calls to my mom and my husband.
That's good. I've seen your post on Facebook. It's been a while, but there were times where you would have insomnia and you would get up to move and you would fall and you would be there for a few hours. And I just looked up some really quick facts when you were talking about the age thing. And I noticed on online that parkinsonsdisease.net, they were talking about only 5% of the population are diagnosed before the age of 60. But you're right. It's between usually between 60 and 85. So yeah, it's very rare.
So, I mean, Michael J. Fox, I mean, I thought I was bad at 37. He was 29.
Wow.
So yeah, he was very young. And I thought mine was bad, but at least I had an extra 10 years almost. But it changes your life, but then you learn to adjust to it. The other big problem was you get these tremors and you can't control them. And hopefully that's when you get medication to control them. But the problem is with the medication they give you for it is a muscle relaxer, and which what makes you want to sleep. So you're taking that 4 times a day. So drowsy most of the time. And so I take about, I think, 5 pills 4 times a day just for my Parkinson's. So 20 pills just for Parkinson's. That's not, you know, my, if I have blood pressure or, you know, vitamins or anything else, but just for Parkinson's, it's 20 pills a day.
Wow. So, what do you ever forget, or you're very good at taking them?
I forget all the time. It's the other problem is your memory goes, and you have problems thinking about words that you're going to say, or like, if you're looking at something, you're like, that's a, you know, a tree, you know, but you know what it is, but you just can't think of the word. So I just call it Parkinson's brain when I can't think of it. Like, it's my, sorry, Parkinson's brain. So my mom goes, no, that's just old age.
So Rich, too, let's talk about something big that happened to you a couple of years ago to help alleviate the tremors. You had brain surgery.
I did. I had deep brain stimulation. What that is they put rods into your brain, sends out signals, the electrical signals. It helped create the dopamine. And it does not cure anything like my walking problems or my stiffness. The only thing it does, it fixes, is your tremors. Mm. I'm very lucky because I can, you can see, wow. I'm really steady now. Before, it's like I'd have problems holding drinks and stuff. And I did get to a group with people who had neurological diseases. And there's one gentleman, he couldn't write his name at all. But if you picked up his cocktail, martini, he could do it without shaking at all. He's like, I don't know why, but his martini, he never spilled anything. But the DBS, it's a process because they first talked to me about it when I first was diagnosed. They said, this is one of the things that you have to think about. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to have brain surgery. You know, because one thing is they don't tell you until you're ready for it is you have to be awake for it. So that was like, no. I finally had to go up and see another doctor because my symptoms were getting worse. I was having falls more often by walking and just general life, things that you can't do for yourself anymore, like button your shirt because of your fine motor skills. So it's really bad when you start to have to rely on someone else button your shirt or to tie your shoes. So I went back up and they started talking about, I saw another doctor and she looked at me and she said, you need to start thinking about DBS. She's like, you're progressing too quickly. All we're doing is changing medication. You really need to stop and think about having DBS done. So when she told me that, I said, let's do it. She's like, what? I said, I'm like, let's just do it. If I have time to go home and think about it, I'll talk myself out of it. I said, start the process now. My husband was with me. Todd was there. And I just looked at him. My eyes teared up, you know, of course, because I don't know what's going to happen. And he's like, let's just do it. Getting approved for the DBS is quite a process. Only about 10% of the people who put in to have the surgery, you have to be selected by a panel to get the surgery. So about 10% of the people actually get the surgery. And you can either have it, you either do one side or they do both sides. Lucky me, I haven't done, had to do it twice. So I have the bars on both sides. And then what you do is you have to be off your medication for 24 hours, which is horrible because not only is there the physical part, but there's also the emotional part. Because I'm very much like, I don't want anybody to see me shake. I don't want anybody to see me walking, you know. So I hid away. I became very reclusive for a long time. And then finally I just had to own it. But for surgery, you had to do it for BF, you had to be off medication. And then you have to see actually 10 different doctors. You see, I can't think of all of them, like a neurologist, a psychiatrist, a social worker, a physical therapist. So there's 10. And they all, you know, you get an evaluation. And there's one question they just asked me, like, what do you hope to get from this? Like, truthfully, I'm like, all I want to do is be able to ride a bike. I miss it, just being able to ride a bike. They said that they only meet once every 4 months and this group gets together and they've selected only two of us who are selected out of the group. Once you are selected, you can do it. You can try to do it one more time. After you get turned, if you get turned down twice, they don't let you do it anymore. Because people have these ideas that this is going to cure them.
Right, right.
This is not a cure for it. So these people have unrealistic outcomes. And right. doctors are like, we can't do that. So you had yours were realistic. You just wanted to be able to ride a bike. So
I have to be honest with you. I thought when you were having the surgery, I thought, oh, he's got it. Like, I thought you were going to be healed.
Yeah, no. As much as I wish. No. So it's about 2 months later, I get an email that just says, this group of doctors have been approved for you to have surgery. And I was like, yay. And then I was also like, oh. I was very excited.
Right.
I was very excited because I knew it would help me. I was also terrified because I was afraid that they would I knew that they're going to be pushing stuff in my brain and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what if they hit my memories? What if I wake up and I don't remember my family or I don't remember that when I was a little kid and how I felt like when it was Christmas or things like that. I was terrified of that.
That was a thing. Can you share with the audience? Because, you know, I saw it when you showed it to me when we were working together, but can you share with the audience, what were the risks of this? You know, there's a reason why you have to go through a huge panel for approval. Can you share what were some of the risks involved with a surgery like this?
I'm trying to think of exactly how to put this. It's more of your emotional side, because you also, one of the other big problems with Parkinson's is you suffer depression and you have this part of your brain that's actually dying. Dopamine is one of those things that helps you stay happy and chipper and everything. So we haven't been on it and they start talking to you about it. It's just having, like I said, the unrealistic ideas. Mm-hmm. And some of these people, they're so bad that that this is their only chance, their only opportunity. And if they get turned down, they kind of go sometimes off the deep end. So yeah, so I was very lucky. I was very, very lucky. All right, we're going to do this over a 6 month period. I got fast tracked. So I had a surgery every February, March, April. So every month I had a surgery, the two brain surgeries, and then they have an implant into my chest, like a pacemaker that has a battery pack in it.
Okay, so tell us about the surgery.
I had two super cool doctors. What's funny is my brain surgeon's name was Dr. Foot. I'm like,
Dr. Scholl.
Exactly. And so I was like, are you sure you're qualified for this? You know, and then he had an assistant who he had just trained. So it was the other doctor was actually going to do my surgery. Dr. Foot was just going to be there to oversee it. I'm like, whoa.
What? The
I'm
apprentice like, was going to do it?
Exactly. I was like, so I went up there the night before surgery and I was like, okay, you guys go home, you go to bed, no drinking. Make sure you get a good night's sleep. Make sure you're up, nice and early and not running late behind for work or anything. Uh-huh. So I tried to make light of it. But they were so super cool. The place is just, they're so warm and welcoming there. One of the great things about it is about 10 of my friends, even from high school, showed up to be, they had to drive from an hour and a half away. Mm-hmm. They all showed up there at 5 a.m. to see me go into surgery. So it was amazing.
That's awesome.
That support is awesome too. That's the other thing is when they talk to you about surgery, they talked about your support system. That's what you see the social worker and stuff like that to make sure you have somebody who's going to support you or family like that. And so I had that. That was down pat. I had that, which was great. Surgery comes along. And the worst part about it, and I've showed you guys the pictures and stuff, is wearing the halo. So they put the halo on and they actually turn the screws and they literally go through your skin into the skull. Mm-hmm. And it's heavy. And you're trying to sit there, trying to balance it. And they're like, okay, it needs to be this way when you lay down to have the surgery. So I got that done. So I was going to pass out from that. But then we go into surgery. You know, most of the time that they sterilize stuff, they have to use heat. Well, you can't sterilize your hair with heat because it would just singe off.
Yeah.
So the next thing you know, they're washing my hair with Betadine.
Oh my God.
So I'm feeling all this. When I'm in this huge gallery operating room, people can see me from upstairs. But I realize there's like these six huge, like 55-inch panel TVs.
What?
And it's showing them to wash my hair. I'm like, what is that? They're like, oh, so you can watch the surgery. I'm like, I don't want to watch the surgery.
Can you change the channel, please?
They did. I watched the waterfalls of around the world for
about
6 hours.
So and, so that surgery, you were on display for medical purposes too, because it doesn't happen that often. Oh wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So they give you just enough kind of put you in twilight, so you're a little bit unconscious, but
yeah,
it's kind of dazed and confused. So I go in there and you're going to start doing it, and I decided I was going to ask the doctor. I'm like, hey, do you need some help? Because like, what do you mean? I said, I can reach around and help you out. You know, and so and you kind of remember these things. With, and I had a great New Zealand doctor who was my anesthesiologist. He's like, once I start saying something really stupid or do, so he's like, okay, let's give you a little bit more here to calm you down because it's terrifying. Because you're going to think you're going to have the surgery and your brain's going to be open. I'm like, I'm not worried about somebody looking up, seeing my behind from the nightgown. I'm worried about they're going to see in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they started
be open
surgery.
Like the,
exactly.
Be open like the doctor in Nightmare Before Christmas. Remember he had like the little lid.
To be like stuck. Like you said, you're in that halo. You can't move. Like it's almost right. Like you're restricted. Was that difficult at all?
Well, that's what I was afraid of because I was claustrophobic. I'm like, and what happens when I lay down on this halo? I'm like, yeah. Things are going to be poking in my head.
Yeah.
You don't feel it. It's really, and I think a lot of it is put a block in your, so it blocks the pain and stuff. But and they give you that stuff to give you, kind of keep you in twilight. So they start everything. The thing is, the scalp is the only part that really has any nerve endings. So you feel the cutting on the scalp, but not, obviously they've numbed it, so you get plenty of shots up there. They cut through that. Then there's the bone, which has no feeling, no nerve endings. And you know when you go to the dentist and it sounds like there's drilling your tooth and you can hear it inside your head?
The vibration,
well,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this time they really are in your head. So it is loud as you know what. It just is like this.
Oh my gosh.
When that happened, did it heighten your, like, did you feel more anxious? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause you can hear it. I mean, I couldn't hear anybody talking next to me. It was so loud.
Oh my gosh.
And then there's only a fine, thin layer of nerve endings on the brain. Brain actually doesn't have any feeling to it either. So they get through that and then they do their surgery. It was weird because people were kept coming in and I was like, hey, my brain's open here. I'm like, these people are coming in and they can't
on display. Big, yeah.
Right. Well, not even that, but what germs they have on them.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So yeah. The doctor's like, see that red line or that yellow line? He's like, as long as they stay behind that, you're okay. Like now if they come in past the red line, then there you can be in something to happen. So there was just students walking in and out, out the whole time when I'm having surgery. And
if it makes you feel any better, when I gave birth, I had the same thing happen to me.
Wait, were they facing the part with you in the stirrups? Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Were they taking selfies with you crowning? Like,
oh, yeah. No, but it was the worst fear and it happened. But you know what? When you're giving birth, you do not care. I was like, what?
Well, it's so funny because they were taking pictures with their cell phones. And I was like, I'm taking pictures in here. I'm like, yeah, can't be good. The doctor's like, do you have your phone with you? He's like, I can take your picture if you want. I have my phone with me in brain surgery. So the doctor took out his own personal cell phone. Took pictures of me having my surgery, not from behind the curtain because nobody wants to see that.
Right.
Just for me sitting there and I'm giving the thumbs up. And actually, during surgery, he texted them to my family. So it's it was very cool because at least they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And, so it's the surgery. So you go back and the first surgery, they also put the wires up in your head. It will go to the lead in your chest later on. So they're kind of balanced up there. So it looks like you got a little knot on your head for a little while. And then after you've had your two surgeries, you would think that after the first surgery that you know what's going to happen. So you go in for your second surgery. No, you're still just as terrified.
That's what I was going to ask you because you already know what's going to happen. So I can imagine you're more, you know, anxious and nervous and scared.
Yeah. I think after the anesthesiologist, because they give you just enough stuff. What's really weird in surgery is when they're starting to figure out where to put the implant, they're like, okay, Rich, this is where we need you. So they kind of wean you off the allotted or whatever they're giving you. And they're like, let me know when you see stars. I'm like, you can't make me see. I'm like, oh, I see stars. They were actually touching nerve spots in my brain to cause things to happen.
What?
Yeah, it was really weird because all of a sudden my hand, he's like, okay, let me know when you feel your left hand moving. And all of a sudden my left hand would
Gosh. It's like they were doing like a little young Frankenstein exercise to kind of prove a point. Well, you know what? From a doctor's point of view, I'd probably be curious too. I'm like, okay, I remember this in figure 13 in my textbook. Let's see.
Right. Exactly. They do it because they have to know exactly where they find the spots where you don't get the connections, the electrical connections. And that's where they put the stems. But it was really cool because I was like, you can't make me see stars or make myself move my arms. And
there they go.
Yeah, and there it goes. Wow.
That's crazy. So
it's very, it's kind of crazy, but exciting at the same time. You're like, wow, you can do that. How far we've come from,
Yeah.
Because I mean, even I'm sure how many people did the doctor do this surgery on before you? Do you know?
Oh, yeah, I asked. And it was, he had done like 1,500.
The actual doctor,
his apprentice or associate, he had set in on about 20 or so. He was a neurologist, he's a neurological surgeon. So he, it's not like he was going in there going, hey, I'm just a foot doctor. Right. Yeah. So he knew where he was going. He had a little
map. And here's my apprentice.
Right. Here's Geppetto. He's going to do your surgery.
I mean, yeah, though, it's good to know that these doctors are continuing their education, you know, training the next doctor. Yeah.
And there's international students in there. And everything like that. So it was definitely interesting. They do knock you out at the end of it when they start to close up your scalp and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of like at that point, like, thank God? Do you feel
you're in there? It's like a 6-hour surgery each one. And so I was, by that time, you're just like, knock me out, do something. I'm like, I just am so tired.
Well, and like, I also want to ask you too, like, you're looking at waterfalls. Did you feel like you needed more stimulation? How did you get your mind off of it?
Dr. Foot stood there and talked to me the whole time. So did my anesthesiologist.
Okay.
Oh, good.
That's good.
So they constantly, especially the anesthesiologist, talked to me the whole time. It's like, hey, how are you doing? They would like rub your arm. Are you doing okay? Anything? And they told me that, like, as soon as you feel something painful or it's not right, tell us. So they're very, acute to what my body was doing.
With that being said, too, I know your motto was, you got this, I got this.
Right.
So what did you draw from?
It was mostly because I wanted my life to get better, because it was either sink or swim at this point. It was either let myself continue to get worse and not be able to do something a lot earlier, or try to still have a life with my family and my husband, and to be able to do stuff normally. So that's what I thought about. I was like, he had told me, he's like, we'll go to Paris and London, which we still haven't gotten to yet. But he had told me, he's like, once you're better and you can walk and everything better, the tremors, we'll go to London. So I also thought about things like that. I'm like, yeah. Then I thought about, I'm going to milk this for a long time. Mm. I'm like, somebody will say, like, I had a broken arm, I had brain surgery.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or, when people make that statement, like, it's not brain surgery. I'm like, actually, it is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, really.
That's
not a lot of people can say that.
So my motto had been, I've got this. So my family was always like, even the doctors were like, don't worry about this. You got this. We've done this a million times. You're able to get through it. And I have to tell you, it was probably the best thing I've ever done, because my tremors immediately, as soon as I went back in, because they do the two surgeries or three surgeries, and then you have to heal up, and then you go in and I was in a study of for the teaching part of the school, for when they have different settings for the battery pack. So some of them make it stronger stimulants or lower voltage, and like I feel like Frankenstein, they talk about the voltage. So they do these settings, but it's kind of like when they do the trial for drugs and things, tell you if you're getting the placebo or not. So there, you either got to stay at home and the nurses came to your house, or you had to go up to Shands. So they're trying to see if that made a difference. And so I luckily got into the home study. So they came here. I thought the thing was already on. Come to find out that it wasn't until a month later they actually turned it on, because it has to heal and everything. Like, yeah, I feel great. I'm like, and the doctor's like, I don't know why. I'm like Superman now. I'm like, where's, but he's like, Rich, he's like, you need to break the seat, but it's not on yet. I'm like, oh.
Okay. So actually, when they turned it on, did you feel better?
It's different because it changes. It took 6 months, almost a year, to get the right setting. They come in and they change it, and you'd be shaking, or if something is too high or it's not enough and feel sluggish and everything. But I had a great nurse who came in every 6 weeks and checked it out and tested it, gave me a tune up, to make sure they had everything going. Once they got the right settings for me, I felt, after about a week of getting used to it, I felt great. I didn't have tremors anymore. I wasn't, walking around, shaking and spilling things. And that's the biggest part about it, I think, is the tremors. That's the part that people can actually see, and they happen. If you have tremors, you pretty much have tremors. It's not like they start and come and go away. It's just a constant thing. So you're living with this shaking whole time.
No more brain surgery, right? You're done.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
I have my little bald spots from where my scars are and where they, that's what I tell people when they ask about losing my hair. I'm like, I had brain surgery and those are for my scars. And they're like, and my brother's like, no, it's not. You're just getting old and losing your hair. So, but I blame it on that.
How long ago was the brain surgery?
2018. Yeah.
So going on 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was an interesting trip. It was a journey that you definitely needed people there with you.
Yeah.
And a good support group. And even when you come back home, your friends, because I became kind of like a recluse, like I had said, is I didn't want to be seen, you know, shaking. And, you know, when you've had a great life and do whatever you wanted and be able to work all day and then go out at night, and now you can't even drive your own car. It's quite embarrassing. So I stayed home. But once I had my surgery, Todd really just started taking me and pulling me and going, you're going out, you're going to see your friends. Alicia, when I came to your birthday, yes. And that was probably, I think, the first one I just got out of surgery. And since then, you know, Todd's just been like, you're not going to sit at home anymore. We're going, we're getting out. And it's been great because, you know, the thing is, I thought that nobody knows. And finally, my husband was like, Rich, they all know. <I'm> like, it's not a big secret. Like, they can look at you and see something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the way you're walking, they're like, oh, and think about that. Like, if everybody else in the world can tell you, that's what friends can tell too. And so I needed to just kind of own it and be and know that my friends would understand what was going on. And so I was afraid that people would just be like, I don't want you around.
Oh, no. I remember when you walked into my birthday, I was like so happy. I was like, oh my God, you're here. And yeah. I know everybody else felt the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a while. At that point, yeah. I think it was a big time gap from the last time we saw you. I remember that.
Yeah. There's a 5-year period there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And now that you've had this surgery and you've experienced benefits from it, would you recommend this surgery to anybody else with Parkinson's that could be eligible?
Absolutely. The weird thing is Todd's father has Parkinson's also, and he had the surgery before I did. He only has it done on one side. And so I knew a little bit what to expect, but because he had told me and Todd had talked to me about it. But absolutely, it's a game changer. It makes a huge difference in what you can do with your life and everything.
So do you have any advice for people that can better understand or how to, you know, any type of social etiquette, any resources for people that should be allies or new to to knowing someone that has Parkinson's or someone in their family immediate circle?
Yeah, even if it's any kind of neurological problem, not just Parkinson's. Like you said, you know, you wanted to be there if it fell, mm-hmm. but you also wanted to make sure that I had my own independence.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing to do. And sometimes you just have a bad day. If there's days where mm-hmm. I can go, and there's days where I can't get my legs to move. And just last year, I had ran into a situation, ended up in the hospital for about 2 months, and you came and saw me, and I had to stay in-house physical therapy at ORMC. So I lived there for 2.5 weeks. But it had just progressed, and I hadn't kept up on some of my exercising and everything mm-hmm. else. And the biggest part of it, my therapist always said, was motion is lotion. The more you move, the better you are. So I had to go in and learn how to walk again.
I remember
this robot called the exoskeleton.
Yeah.
It literally retaught my muscles, mm-hmm. muscle memories, how to walk and correctly. So it was a knockdown. You think you're getting up to the top of the hill, it's like you get kicked back down.
Right.
But that was a hard thing to go through. But again, my family, my friends, who were all there, and just to be aware, and mm-hmm. you had done the best thing. You were aware and you knew what was going on, but you wanted me to have my own independence. But I knew that if anything happened, if I had fallen or something, she would be there, you know. And so, but the biggest thing is, and just so when you have DBS done, the biggest thing is you cannot big no, don't have an MRI because it's a big giant magnet, the metal rods. So you have to be very careful and have your neck alert bracelet says no MRIs and DBS. And so,
then you really like things. I would never have thought of that because what if it's someone that's looking to get diagnosed and they're probably thinking of looking at something else and they get an MRI that could make it obviously worse?
No, the MRI won't hurt you only if you had surgery.
Oh, gotcha.
The implants.
Oh, that. Oh, okay. Yeah. That. Yeah. It'll rip them out.
Okay, Ralph.
Sorry. I'm a little slow today.
That's exactly what my doctor said. He's like, you know, he's like, this is, you can't do this, and you can never have one of these. I'm like, which is fine because I'm claustrophobic.
Oh my gosh.
The MRIs are fine. Yeah. And so then he's like, am I like, can I ride a bike? He's like, I don't know. Can you? And I was like, may I ride the bike? And he's like, okay, because you have to wear a helmet because you have a very expensive brain now. Like, you need to protect it.
Yeah.
So let's end on this note. So are you riding a bike?
I'm riding a stationary bike.
Get you a tricycle. We'll get you the giant-sized tricycle.
Three-wheelers. So I do that for exercise and stuff. I have a bike. I just haven't got the tires fixed and stuff like that. But I have to admit that I'm a little weary about being out on the concrete. Because we have so many people walking on the sidewalks and in the streets at hazards. I'm like, I don't know, maybe I'll just stick with the stationary bike. But I know that I could if I wanted to. It's the deck you're dealt. You know, the biggest problem is getting out of your own head, because you do go into a depression from it. You know, like, why me? Why did this happen to me? What did I do? Why did you pick me to have this? Especially wait till I'm 60 and you know, my life is, you know, I've already lived my life and done everything I wanted to do. There's some other drawbacks to it, you know, some things that just, I think that you don't really want to talk about, but just kind of get to you. But as long as you have, you know, a good outlook on things and you have a good support group, you know, it's good. And have the surgery if you have the opportunity, because it's life-changing.
Well, thank you, Rich, for sharing your story with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We love you.
Love
you.
Absolutely, buddy. Okay, now it's time for our recap.
A brain surgery.
Find your support group.
Right.
Dr. Foot.
No MRIs.
And Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Oh, Michael J. Fox. Michael Keaton.
Halo.
Baby, I can see your halo.
Right. Reaching around and helping the doctor out.
Reach around and help the doctor.
I've got this, and family support. Yes. Some big recaps for you.
Yes. And ride your bike, baby. Ride your bike.
I know. I need to. I've got to do that. I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to put it everywhere. Like, ding, 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 ding. Get out of my way. We're running little kids over. So, like, stay off the sidewalks. Broughton's riding a bike.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.